Welcome in to the OMR Podcast International, where we go inside the minds of some of the biggest players in the digital and tech space. My name is Scott Peterson, and I'm a digital marketing editor at OMR. Today, I am joined by founder and CEO of So Rare, Nicholas Julia. For a little bit of context, So Rare is a rapidly growing fantasy football company based in France that also has official partnerships with the biggest soccer clubs and leagues in the world. So Rare also operates in a fascinating space, the world of NFTs, which stands for non-fungible tokens. By combining fantasy football with these NFT collectibles, So Rare is one of the few players in the space to add an element of utility to NFTs, meaning engagement is high and most users come and stay for the game. As is often the case, however, rare collectible items attract the attention of professional investors, who shell out insane amounts of cash on digital assets. One example, late last year, a unique So Rare card of Brazilian football star Neymar was sold on a secondary peer-to-peer platform for over $60,000. But at its heart, So Rare is a game whose primary purpose is providing its community with the best gaming experience it can. So when I sat down with Nicholas, I was excited to have the opportunity to ask him all about the things that make So Rare such a fascinating platform. From the NFTs, to the professional investors, to the game itself, and the partnerships with the clubs around the world. We talked about all of those topics and more, which you can hear in the OMR Podcast International right now.
Buzz. Well, I'm thrilled to be joined by co-founder and CEO of So Rare, Nicholas Julia. Nicholas, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me today. I'm really excited to have this conversation with you.
Yeah, same goes for me. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. You are the CEO of a very fascinating company in a very exciting space. And I think the most obvious place, the best place to start is the most obvious one. And that is, what is So Rare?
Yeah, so I think you can think about So Rare as a new kind of football game. It's a mix between a collectible game and a fantasy game. So basically, you need to own a collectible to play a fantasy game. So fantasy game is, you know, this kind of games where you have an impact on the real world. So the performance of the player on the pitch impacts your performance as a gamer. So that's the very high level overview of the product.
Okay. And you launched in 2018, is that correct?
Yeah, we incorporated the company end of 2018, and we launched the public beta. It was December 19.
Okay. And how big are you now in terms of users? Just to give a little context to the listeners, users, maybe employees?
Yeah, of course. So it's still early. We are still in public beta. We have roughly 4,000 paying users. And in January, so last month, we made $4 million in sales during the single month of January. So there's a lot of interest and engagement around this blockchain cards. In terms of employees, it's still early too. Like, we are a team of 12 people. Now I'm gonna grow to 30 people by the end of the year, but it's the beginning, hopefully, of a big journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And where are you primarily active? Where is So Rare most popular?
Yeah, so in terms of geographical split, it's 20% in the UK, 20% in the US. Then we have 10, 10, 10, France, Germany, and Italy. So that's 70%. And then 30% is rest of the world, mainly Russia and Asia.
Okay. You're based in France.
Yeah.
How did you get to So Rare, to where you are now? What was kind of the genesis of the company?
Yeah, the genesis of the company. So with my co-founder Adrien, we are long-term entrepreneurs in the blockchain space. And in late 2017, we saw a new technology on top of one of the most popular blockchain called Ethereum. Basically, this technology enables the creation of scarce digital items. So You know, like the web, as we all know it, you can copy everything. You can copy pictures, documents, and so on. And we were fascinated by that because as human beings, we have been collecting things for centuries in the physical space. And now we have a technology where you can collect something digital. And so we were like, okay, that's crazy. What if we bring one of the most coveted brands or IP on top of this technology, which is the image of football players, so that not only it's a scarce digital item, but it's a branded and scarce digital item? So that was step two in our thinking. And then we were like, okay, that's super cool collectibles, but what if we bring a usage value? So it's not only a new class of collectibles, but on top of that, you can use them every week in a compelling game. So that's a game design element. And so with those three pillars in mind, new technology, the mm-hmm. IP and the game design, we started building the early prototypes of the game.
You said you were an entrepreneur in the crypto space.
Yes.
So you just kind of, you also had a love for football, for soccer beforehand.
We are two huge football fans, and so
okay.
When we saw this technology and the fact that now with this technology we can collect digital things, the first idea that came to mind was to apply it to what we love, because mm-hmm. It was easy to test the idea. Like we were just building something for us and for our friends, and it's always best, I think, to it doesn't work every time, right? But it's easier because you have this immediate feedback loop, and so that was the beginning. And so we are, of course, big gamers in the space, like FIFA, fantasy games, sure. and so on.
It's always easier to get up and go to work in the morning if you are doing something that you're passionate about.
Exactly.
Combine some passions
then
it doesn't feel like you ever have to work a day in your life.
Exactly.
So what was the moment where you realized, like, okay, this is actually there's potential in this beyond just like for our own interests and for our friends, where you saw that, okay, this could turn into a viable business?
Yeah. It's a good question. I think there's two elements. Of course, when we opened in the public beta in December 19, we made 30,000 in sales the first month. So it's really good for our first month. And then it was only like a very strong growth from 30,000 a bit more than 1 year ago to 4 million last month. But I think more importantly, the strongest signal for us is the engagement of the community. The fact that, mm-hmm. There's dozens of side applications, side games, tutorials, podcasts, and people are spending more than 1 hour a day playing the game in the product. Retention rates are crazy high. Really, it's this engagement and this level of passion and love that, we were like, okay, it's early, but this level of engagement is very rare. In general, like whatever space you are looking at. And so that was really like the thing that we were optimizing for, like trying to build something that people love and where they like to connect and chat with their friends and so on. So for us, when we saw the first side applications, side games, and the fact that people were spending a lot of time around that and in the community, that was the moment where we're like, okay, maybe we're onto something exceptional.
Like, so you also have partnerships with professional leagues and clubs, some of the biggest clubs in the world, from Juventus, Bayern Munich, and just recently I saw that you guys are branching out into Mexico.
Yeah.
So what were some of those initial talks like? I can imagine it being very difficult approaching a club of a soccer team, which is this very traditional entity that is very loath to alienate or rock the boat, alienate their fans, rock the boat, especially with maybe a technology that they don't really understand. So how were you able to convince them to join you?
Yeah, it was hard at the beginning. As you said, there's football clubs and leagues, they They sealed very few partnerships with companies like us over the last decades. Like maybe you have Electronic Arts with FIFA, Panini, Topps. It's like, you know, very few companies. And for a good reason, because, you know, one of their biggest assets is the image of the club, of the football players, and they cannot compromise with it, right? And so when you are like a small company, they, you know, you don't have the credibility, you don't have the history. So why should they take a bet on you? It's a complicated question for them. I think, you know, from day one, we were convincing enough to tell them, we are onto something huge. We are building an entertainment giant, we're gonna bring you a new revenue stream. Even if the figures were modest at the beginning, like they saw the growth every month that was crazy, and so little by little they were convinced about that. So it's a new revenue stream, and it's an opportunity to develop in new markets. So I mentioned US being, you know, one of the most important markets for us at the moment, and it's a clear target market for all European clubs, for instance. So new revenue stream, new markets, and also a cool product for the fan, and taking care of their brand, their IP, I think these are like very important elements for them. And then, you know, once you have the first initial couple of clubs and leagues, then it gets, you know, easier and easier, because you have this this positive reinsurance loop that starts to kick off.
So just snowballs.
Exactly.
The proof of concept just kind of snowballs, and people see that it's a legitimate business. There's a lot of potential in this. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Did you check into or notice any correlation between clubs that maybe have more of an analytics department? I'm thinking of, like, there's traditional stats, there are next generation stats, like in the US for a lot of different, you know, baseball and football and stuff. And they all have dedicated teams and departments to these analytics and these new stats.
Yeah, I think it was, so our main interlocutors at the clubs are like commercial departments. So they are, most of the time they are, you know, not on this kind of topics, not connected as much to these departments. But I think as we grow, we're going to have more and more conversations with these teams. We are very interested in it, because we have a fantasy game, and we developed a scoring algorithm to rank the performance of the player on the pitch. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of synergies to find with these teams in the club. So at the moment, we don't have that much interactions with them, but yeah, hopefully that's something that we develop in the future. We start having for the top clubs, like inbound messages from these teams to have initial conversation. It's more like exploration at the moment.
So if I'm not mistaken, the very first partnership you had was with the Jules Pied League, the top flight in Belgium, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And that's with the entire league, so not just an individual club.
Exactly, that was with the entire league, yeah.
And how do these agreements differ, or what is the difference between the agreements with an individual club and with an entire league? Are there pros and cons to both?
Yep. Yeah, so like in terms of structure, they are, you know, quite the same. It's a licensing model, so we give back part of the revenue we generate to the club or the league. So they are pretty much the same. Then in terms of image rights, you have certain geographies where the league, they have, you know, all the rights of the club, so you can go directly to the league. Then you have all the geographies where, you know, they don't have it, so you need to go club by club. So you don't really choose, you know, all the time. And then, like, the pros and cons to answer your question, maybe, like, you know, if you partner directly with a club, you have access to their social media, to their marketing support, and so on. So, you know, to reach new audiences, that's clearly, you know, something that is cool. And then partnering with a full league is best for the product because you have you have all the players from all the clubs. So you know, for the community, it's better to have a full coverage.
Yeah, sure, that makes sense. And how many partnerships do you have in total right now?
So at the moment we have 140 clubs that are signed, and it's going to be 200 in the coming months. We have this goal to, you know, to cover all the top 20 leagues in the world of football in the coming months. So it's coming.
Sure. Okay. So then these agreements that you strike up with the clubs or the leagues, they give you the rights to create, sell, and use their players, their names, logos, all that stuff on the cards for your fantasy game. Regarding the game, can you walk me through a little bit how the So Rare, the gaming aspect of the company works?
Yeah, of course. So once you own this blockchain cards that are scarce and that you can trade and so on, you can use them in tournaments. So twice a week, we have midweek tournaments and end of the week tournaments. You can use these cards to compose your team. So it's a team of five cards that you can compose. And based on the performance of your player on your manager. So based on the performance of your players on the pitch, you get points. And then at the end of the tournament, we just add up the points of your cards. And you get ranked on the leaderboard. And there's leaderboards, there's our divisions like in the real world. So you would start in the fourth division, you know, with your cards, and then maybe you can progress to the third division and compete for better prizes and so on. So that's the basic loop, I would say. You own a card, you use it to compose your team, you enjoy live games, and you see your player scoring points. And then, at the end of the tournament, you see your total points and your position in a given division. All the players are ranked on a 0 to 100 basis. So roughly, like if your player is 50, it's an average game. 60 is good. I mean, you see the model, and so yeah, just try to select the best players on the pitch, and yeah, prove your football skills.
Sure. Yeah. Definitely. So you have a keeper in any combination of four defenders, midfielders, and strikers to field a team of five, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And depending on how those players actually perform in the given match, then you grade better, you have more points.
Exactly.
How does the score... sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. I just missed something. So you have something more. So it's not just, I would say, the performance on the pitch, the collectible element, you have this collectible too. So, element two. So, the scarce, the more scarce the card, the higher division you can enter. So if you play with very limited edition cards, you can play in higher divisions, right? So, that's a way to segregate divisions. Your card is evolving too in terms of power. So the more you play with your cards, the more experience it gets, and so you know that all the cards are unique because you level up your cards the more you play with it. So these are like important parts of the gameplay that I was noticing, I think.
Yeah, sure. I was going to ask you about that because like you mentioned, there are different scarcities of cards. So the cards are limited. There are, if I'm not mistaken, rare, so rare, and unique cards. Is that correct?
Yeah. Rare are 100 edition per player per year. Super rare are 10 editions per player per year. And unique, one edition per player per year.
Okay. And how do people acquire the cards?
So they can acquire cards on the primary market. So these are cards that we sell for the first time, and they can also acquire cards on the marketplace. So these are cards that are sold by existing users. So we can call it like the second-hand market. So they can buy them either way.
Okay, so you can either buy packs directly from you guys or the peer-to-peer because of the, and we'll get to this in a second.
Correct.
The NFT collectible part of this, the digital objects, they're then sold between users.
That's correct.
Okay. Of the monthly users or the amount of users in total, how many field teams that are using cards that are not super scarce?
Basically we have all this three scarcities that I just mentioned. So the unique, the super rare, and the rare card. So these are all blockchain cards. So they live on the blockchain, and they are, you know, paying cards. And then we have a fourth scarcity, actually, which is common cards. They are free. They are not, I would say that they are not tradable, and they don't live on the blockchain. It's more like you can see them as kind of onboarding. You can use them during 8 game weeks, just to see if you like the game. And so roughly like, last month we had, 4,000, users with the paying cards. So the blockchain cards playing the game actively every week, and a bit more, 6,000 playing the game with the common cards, so the free part of the game. So that was the breakdown roughly.
Okay. And are my figures correct that about 90% of all your users are primarily or also engaged in the fantasy football aspect, leaving about 10%? That are more interested in the collectible side?
Yeah, it's even a bit higher than that. Last time we had a look, it was closer to 95% of the users that, you know, have this blockchain cards that engage actively within the game. Even the one that arrived with this collector mindset, they end up playing the game because the game is free to play. They cannot lose the card, they cannot lose money. So it's only upside, right? So you have these cards. Why not, play them in the game and have fun in the game? So this metric is really high.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the NFTs, the non-fungible tokens, which for So Rare are based on the Ethereum blockchain. Could you maybe give our listeners a brief overview of what NFTs are and what they unlock?
Yeah. So NFTs are scarce digital assets. These are assets that, you know, even if the company or the sport league want to issue more, it's not possible. So the blockchain secure the number of assets that can be issued. So that's the first property, scarcity. The second property is what I call portability, meaning that you can move them as you want in different applications. So if you think about Fortnite or FIFA, whatever game, when you buy something, you cannot move it elsewhere. But in our product, if you buy Lewandowski cards and you want to trade it in the marketplace or use it elsewhere, you can move it. And so that's something. It's like in the physical world when, once you buy a trading card, you can move it and trade it as you want. And we are bringing the same properties in the digital space. So the first is scarcity. The second one is portability. I think the third one is what we call true ownership, meaning that nobody can take these cards away from you. There's plenty of histories in the world of video games where, the company is dead and the game is dead, and then you lose all these items that you paid for and you engage with emotionally, and then they are just gone because they live in in the servers of the company. Here you truly own these assets, so you have the kind of what we call private key in the technical jargon, but that's a password to really own them, and so that's something that's huge. And yeah, maybe the last one is the traceability. So, we can see all the history of the trades of these assets. That's one of the key properties of the blockchain. Maybe to sum it up, scarcity, portability, true ownership, and traceability are the main features, I would say.
Sure. And so because of the digital ownership that these NFTs enable and the portability of it, you not only have the utility on So Rare, the platform itself, but like you said, you can transport it away as an owner to and do with it whatever you please, as either as a collector or also to sell it on secondary markets. Mm-hmm. And there have been some very lofty sales of some so rare cards, including, I believe the record is a Neymar card.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah. I think the record is probably for Neymar. It was a bit more than 60,000. Yeah.
Yeah. That, it's incredible.
Yeah.
How does the resale of the cards work? And what I mean by that is when you enter these licensing agreements with the clubs, mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that they have a stake in the subsequent sales, even off of So Rare.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah. To be a bit more precise, they have a stake on the stake we take. So if we don't take any stake, they don't have. I mean, if we take a commission on the secondary sale, they take something mm-hmm. too. That's correct.
Okay, so they get a commission on your commission.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And how long? How long is this commission?
Yeah.
This stake valid for you? Is it based on number of sales? Is it based on time? Is it just forever?
Yeah, it's based on time, and it really depends on the agreements we have. There's no real rule about it. Yeah.
Okay, so just depends on the club that you'd have. You would pay it forward. What about from on your end? Just generally speaking, I'm just trying to so. One of the big things right now in the NFT space is the sale and auction of digital works of art.
You mean the main trends that we observe in the NFT space in general?
In general, yeah. Yeah. Just it's like some of the some crypto, whether it's Crypto Kitties or I believe there was an art collective hashtags that made quite a few headlines last week.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking about that in terms of works of art. So like an original Picasso, for lack of a better word, in the physical space. So you maybe buy it. And then at some point, after so many purchases and sales, the original artist would no longer have get a cut.
Yep.
When does that stop for you guys, or does it? Is it just something that you are basically baked in? So every sale of this thing from this point until the end of time, like you get a commission, or how do these models work?
Yeah, that's exactly how it works. And I think so. You mentioned art. I think it's huge for artists because for the first time, they can get a cut on the value they created, not only on the initial sale but all the subsequent sales, which is something they don't have today on the physical space. And so that's why like crypto art is taking off. So strongly alongside blockchain gaming and blockchain collectibles. So yeah, mm-hmm. that's a huge value proposition of the technology.
And like you just mentioned, the sales are absolutely exploding. People are taking note, and not only people but also professional investors, and they have also gotten involved in So Rare collectibles. How do you see that? How do you feel about these actors kind of, for lack of a better word, driving up prices? I guess it's good for business.
Yeah, it's not an easy question, because at the end of the day, we are building a game for millions of people, and it's for people, right? It's not for investors. But that being said, I mean, we our goal is also to create a cult brand and brand that's going to last for decades. And if you manage to do so, for sure, you're going to attract interest from people because they just want it, right? They mm-hmm. desire those goods, and they believe in the company, they believe in the technology, they believe in the product, and so they want to be in. For us, the rules are pretty clear. You can enter the game, like the fantasy game, if you are a natural person. So that's the rule. But then the thing that we cannot control is if you are a natural person and you want to go to your bank and, you know, take a loan, mm-hmm. or if you want to go to an investment, a blockchain investment fund and, you know, and have the blockchain fund invest in you, like, these are things that are outside of our control and that, you know, yeah, we can truly control, right?
Sure. Are there any steps that you are taking to make sure that the core players, the core user bases, don't feel alienated or put at a disadvantage for these games?
Yeah, of course. So I think that it's part of our job is to create a fun place for everyone, like for all budgets and for them to have fun. You need to have entry prices that are for all budgets, and you need to have a progression as a manager where you have fun. So we are working on ways to have more diverse prices, because with all this engagement and enthusiasm around the product, like, the prices are quite high at the moment, so we are thinking about ways to have prices for everyone, I would say.
With the skyrocketing prices, generally speaking, of cryptocurrencies, have you noticed that, or are you worried, concerned at all about those prices possibly precluding or keeping like a large segment of your users from actually taking part?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, in the very early days, most of the user base were blockchain gamers, so the people that who own crypto. And we're playing the early crypto games. But now I think more than 80% of our audience, maybe they heard about blockchain and they heard about the technology, but they don't own crypto. They think in terms of euros, and that's, cryptocurrency when they look at the prices. And so at the end of the day, the fluctuation of the cryptocurrency is not of a big of impact on them. Mm-hmm. Maybe for, a small subset of the community, they can compare the fact that, yes, the cryptocurrencies are rising, and so are Solana coins going to rise as much as another cryptocurrency, and having this kind of question. But it's for a small part of the community.
Another question I wanted to ask you is, there are, to my knowledge, no other fantasy football games in the NFT space like yours. There are some other, in the US at least, a couple of other businesses, memorabilia shops that do they do provide these digital assets in the similar space, one of them being Top Shots, yep, for the NBA, which, if you don't know, they basically make NFT video highlights that you can collect and sell,
yep,
also in the secondary market. And I read, according to Forbes, the sales of on the secondary market of the car of the videos almost outnumber 2-1 the amount of revenue generated from sales of packs of,
yep,
of videos and cards. Is that a similar situation to So Rare?
At the moment, it's a more balanced. It's a 50-50 for us. Mm-hmm. For the last couple of months, it has been 50% on the primary market and 50% on the secondary market.
All right, Nicholas, before I let you get out of here, I had a couple of questions I wanted to ask you from a very micro level. I wanted to zoom out, as it were, about the crypto space and NFT space in general.
Yeah.
One of them is, So Rare, as we mentioned earlier, was founded in 2018, essentially on the heels of the latest Bitcoin crash in 2017. Mm-hmm. Prices peaked and then they dropped. NFTs are not necessarily hinged, or they aren't hinged to Ethereum. So I'm just curious, how did the performance of Bitcoin at the time impact your choice for the So Rare NFT?
You mean the choice of the blockchain? So why, you know?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So for us, it was more like about the fit between you know the blockchain, like the Bitcoin or the Ethereum blockchain, and our product and our vision and the non-fungible token. So the standard, the early standard came out with CryptoKitties on the Ethereum blockchain. And so for us, it was, you know, an early, an obvious fit to go on this chain, rather than, you know, going on Bitcoin, where there's more limitations for the kind of use case that, that we are doing. So yeah, it was more a question of fit between the technology and the product, because yeah, it was not really a question of price of the underlying crypto asset.
What are some of the things that Ethereum can do that maybe other cryptocurrencies cannot?
So yeah, it's the programmability of what, you know, what we call the smart contracts that is very flexible and interesting. So for example, we can say that, you know, we're gonna issue 100 editions of Lionel Messi for this year for this kind of scarcity. So you know, this kind of flexibility of programmability is something that is rooted in the Ethereum blockchain, and that is really interesting for the kind of use cases that we are developing.
And one last thing. So you've only been around for a couple of years. Things are looking onward and upward. Growth is looking great for you guys. Where do you see this going in 5 years?
Yeah, so I think the long-term vision is to create an entertainment giant, to create this place where you know, you hang out with your friends, you have fun in your friends with your friends, and you engage with a, you know, cult cult and a cult brand. And so yeah, to achieve that, the first step is to create a fantasy football leader. The second step is maybe to have, you know, all these side games and applications built around us. So having usage value that is not limited to one fantasy game, but to many different games that are fantasy or not. And then something that's really interesting for us is maybe to add kind of media components, so that maybe if you have Lionel Messi in your lineup and he scores a goal, you see near real time the goal of Lionel Messi, or the assist, or, you know, any decisive action. So these are the kind of things that we are currently looking at, and that we can integrate in the medium term.
Do you see a future in which SoRare kind of maybe branches out to not only cards but maybe video highlights as well, a la Top Shots?
It's definitely a very interesting model that they have. At the moment, it's not really the product direction, you know, that we have. That's more around, you know, cards. What's for sure is that we're going to develop more limited edition cards with different designs, different aspects. It's not totally outside of the possibilities that we have some video content, which is not, you know, part of the current priorities, but yeah, it's definitely interesting.
All right. Nicholas, thank you so much for this fascinating talk about SoRare, NFTs and cryptos and all of this brave new world stuff. I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Hopefully we can catch up one day.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time. It was a really cool conversation.
All right. Take care.
Take care and goodbye.